Welcome back to Fund Your Future with DRS. And we're looking at some frequently asked questions today. I think this is our second episode with some FAQs that we've been getting from some of our listeners. So let's jump into it. So we have Emily who asked, would you mind covering the option of removing all or some of your PERS money into different accounts and how that affects your service credit? She says, I'd be curious how this process differs for people who have vested versus people who haven't.
Yeah, there's a lot here, and it does vary by what plan you're in. So plan three members, we've talked about this, where they have two parts to their retirement benefit. They have their pension benefit, the monthly benefit that they're going to receive when they retire, and then they also have their investment account. And so for plan three members, when they stop working, they can take out their contributions whenever they want, and it has no impact on their retirement benefit, on the pension benefit. They can roll it over into an IRA or do whatever else they want if they want to manage their own investments. However, a plan one or two member, and we'll just focus on plan two members now because that's where most people are at. If they stop working and take out their retirement contributions, they have to take them all out. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, I just need $100 to pay off a debt or something. You have to take out all the funds if you're going to withdraw the contributions. And if you do that, you forfeit all of the retirement credit that you earn. So you're giving up your pension benefit by taking that withdrawal of contributions.
And this is something that a person would do after they retire?
They would do it after they end employment. Mm-hmm. So they could do that at age 25, mm-hmm. or they could do that at age 85. Now, if you're over 65, and you're vested, as the question was asking, you're eligible to start collecting your monthly pension benefit. And there are some people who decide, I don't want that monthly pension benefit. I just want the contributions that were paid in. I'm going to go roll those over into a different retirement account, and I'm going to manage them myself. But then once again, you forfeit that monthly pension. So for people who are vested, and that's generally having more than 5 years of time worked, they have a choice to make. Would I rather have my contributions, or would I rather have the service credit that's going to allow me to collect a pension at age 65? For people who are younger, it can be sometimes kind of a coin flip. I could go invest that money in the market over the next 30 or 40 years. It could grow significantly, and my pension is going to be based on my average salary from 30 or 40 years prior. It's going to be smaller than if I'm just, you know, retiring now. Inflation's going to have eaten away at that size, that pension benefit, because of it being based on salary. So it's definitely something that people could consider when they end employment if they're vested. If you're not vested, you still lose the service credit, but there's no pension benefit associated with it since you're not vested. Though sometimes what happens is people, they work for a year, they leave employment, they take out their contributions because they think they're never coming back. And then they come back a year later and they're starting from zero again, yeah. as far as the amount of service credit. So then they have to still work 5 years from that point going forward.
Yeah. So maybe if you do end up leaving, just maybe kind of keep the money in there for a couple years to give yourself a little time to decide.
Yeah. You know, I think it's really hard for somebody who's 25 to think about what their life's going to be like when they're 35 or 45. What different path could you take? And so for a lot of people, it does make sense to leave it there for a year or two, but people have bills, people have expenses. They might need those funds more immediately. And I think there was a second part to the question, basically, can I pay that money back when I come into employment? And I think we talked about this on a previous episode with Nisha, but you can. So once you return to employment, you have 5 years to pay those contributions back, plus the interest that had accrued during that time period. And then if it's beyond 5 years, it's much more expensive to purchase that time back. So for some people who, if they rolled the money over into an IRA or another retirement account, they could just roll it back in and pay that bill. Maybe it's going to cover the whole bill. Maybe it's not going to quite cover the bill, depending on how the money did while it was invested and what happened with the interest rates during that time. But it does allow you some flexibility versus if you take it as cash, then you have to go find that money to pay it back later.
Yeah, for sure. I think that sometimes people are kind of afraid of rolling their money over, mm-hmm. and it can be something that people do all the time.
Yeah, it's very normal, I think, for people to consolidate their retirement accounts. You roll them over from, you know, if you've had multiple employers, roll them over into one IRA or something like that, or into your new employer, or into DCP. If you're now a state employee and you have retirement accounts from multiple places, but it is a little bit of work. I mean, there's a little bit of paperwork, whether you do it online or through a paper form or calling, doing it over the phone. You know, I think all of us get a little bit frustrated with administrative burden. Like, I don't know how you are about like setting up doctor's appointments or things like that. Like, it's just like, oh, something I should do or I could do, but it's not automatic. There's a little bit of inertia you have to overcome if you're going to think about rolling over retirement accounts.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, our second question today comes from Rachel, who asked, what happens if I die before I retire? Will my spouse have an option to receive a pension benefit? Could they both be a beneficiary and a survivor?
Yeah. So this question came out of our episode that where we talked about the difference between beneficiaries and survivors. And it actually sparked some interesting questions, because I think it's really important for folks to realize that sometimes state law overrides whatever choices you had. And we talked a little bit about this on the episode, but we wanted to go into a little bit more depth about, if you have a surviving spouse and you pass away, or if you have a minor child and pass away, in most cases, if you have more than 20 years in the system or 10 years, this depends on the system and plan, but that surviving spouse has an option of being a beneficiary or a survivor. So they can say, I'm going to be a beneficiary, I'm going to take the contributions. And it's, in some ways, it's actually similar to the conversation we were just having about rolling out your money or taking the pension benefit.
Right.
Am I going to take this ongoing monthly benefit as a survivor? It might have some reductions because it's earlier on, maybe not at age 65.
So could they wait till they are 65?
No. So that's, there's some decisions that have to be made. Does it make sense to take this monthly benefit? It's as if the person who passed away selected the joint life benefit of 100%. Mm-hmm. So the benefit that you would get as 100% survivor, meaning that if I'm going to get this amount and then when I pass away, my spouse is going to continue to receive the same pension benefit, that same benefit is available to my spouse if I pass away and haven't yet retired. Yeah. They can take that monthly benefit. But if they're a Plan 2 member, they can choose to say, I'm going to take the contributions instead. I'm going to roll them over into an IRA or I'm going to take them as cash. And it's sort of similar as well with Plan 3 members, where those contributions are separate. Those go to your beneficiary, but your surviving spouse may be eligible for a survivor benefit, an ongoing pension benefit. So you could name, you know, your brother, sister, neighbor as your beneficiary, and they get the contributions, but your spouse, your surviving spouse, would get the ongoing monthly pension benefit if you meet the requirements for the amount of service credit. We should probably have somebody on the podcast from our, we have a whole team of folks who work with people's accounts when they pass away. And it gets a little bit nuanced because the different systems and plans have different rules. And so we tend not to go into too much depth about that. But in a lot of ways, those benefits serve in a similar way as like a life insurance policy, that they're going to continue to receive some monthly benefit for the rest of their life.
Yeah. And so our third question today is something a little bit more of a general question that we get at DRS is my pension benefit based on the last 5 years of my career?
Yeah, I've joked about this in a number of presentations I've done. In most of the systems, it's called your average final compensation, the highest five-year period average final compensation. In some of the other plans, it's called final average salary. There's different names depending on the different plans you're in, and that in itself is confusing. But the word final in there makes it sound like it is your last 5 years. And generally that's true, but it is really your highest 5 years.
Right.
And we have a short video on our website that show this in a visual. We really line up every year you worked, or really every month you worked, and try to find where that highest average five is, no matter where it is in your career. And I think for a lot of people, this can be relieving. If I've worked 20 or 30 years and like, I just want to downshift a little bit. I want to work an 80% job, or I want to go to halftime, or I want to take a lower paying job that might have a little more freedom.
Yeah, I could definitely see that if you had been working like a really high stress job for a while and, like you said, wanting to downshift for the last couple years of your career.
Yeah, it doesn't negatively impact your pension. Yeah. At that point, your average salary is just locked in. It's what it was, you know, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, or 10 or 20 years ago, really, depending on the situation. We're going to line up all of your salary and we're going to look for the highest 5 years, no matter where it happened in your career.
That's really awesome. I love that. And then our final question today is one that we get all the time, which is, how does one retire with DRS? You can't just say, I'm out of here, and then they send you a check in the mail the next month. There is a bit of paperwork involved, but yeah, we've tried to make the process relatively easy through the online account.
Yeah, so we survey a lot of folks after they retire and try to get feedback on how we can improve our processes. And one of the most common things we hear from people is like, I didn't realize how easy this process would be to start my DRS pension, but that there are a lot of other parts of retirement, Social Security and Medicare and maybe other retirement accounts. And
your DCP account maybe.
Yeah, and lots of different decisions to make.
Yeah, choosing a beneficiary and survivor.
Yeah, yeah. So the actual retirement application process with DRS, and once again, we have a number of good videos on our website. They'll show you screens. They'll walk you through the process if you feel intimidated by it. But I think once a lot of people get into the process, they realize like, oh, there's only a few things I have to know or ask. You have to, as you talked about, am I going to provide a survivorship option to someone? So that's one big decision that you have to make. Another big decision is, what day are you actually going to stop working? If you're actively working, what day are you going to stop? And then you're going to retire effective the first of the following month. For people who have already stopped working, that's an easy decision. It's just when you turn 65. When you turn 65, the month after, you'll start your retirement. There are some other decisions around how you're going to have tax withholding set up. And that's, once again, we have some calculators on our website that help people navigate that process. But it's really just like when you start a new job, you fill out a W-4 and I want to have it, you know, withheld at the married rate or the single rate or whatever. And then the IRS tax tables take that into consideration. And that's something you can change down the road as well if you find that not enough is being withheld or too much is being withheld. And then really the last piece of information we need is your bank account information. We need to know where to deposit the money to. And you would actually be surprised. There are folks who call us. They haven't worked for a month or two and they said, hey, why hasn't my retirement check come yet? And it's, you know, they worked for an employer for 20 or 30 years and they just didn't realize that there were more steps to the process, that they had to notify us, that they had to make some of these decisions. And we can certainly help people walk through that process. And I think the other good news that I always try to remind people who are in that position is we're always going to pay you back to when you stopped working, to when you were first eligible. And so you'll get a retroactive payment if you missed a few pension payments because you were a little late in the game. Ideally, we like people to start the process, you know, 6 months, 3 months in advance. It sort of depends on how quickly you need to make that decision as well. We can help get people through the process quickly if they need to. But ideally, it's something you want to get started, contact DRS, get an official estimate of what your retirement benefits are going to be, and then complete the application that asks those handful of questions.
Cool. Well, hopefully this gives our listeners a lot to think about.
Yeah, we should remind people that we also have an email address that they can email additional questions into.
Yes.
Which I never remember the email address. So.
Yeah, so if you have more questions, send an email to drs.podcasts@drs.wa.gov.
Yeah, and you can find it on our website too, on the podcast page if you need it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And now we'd love to hear from you. What topics would you like to hear about? What questions do you have for us? Send an email to drs.podcasts@drs.wa.gov. That's drspodcasts@drs.wa.gov. The Department of Retirement Systems provides this podcast as a public service, but it's neither a legal interpretation nor a statement of DRS policy. References to any specific product or entity do not constitute an endorsement or recommendation. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by DRS employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of DRS or any of its officials.